One of your paintings, Go to the Moon.
If I could create a work of art that created a shift in consciousness, then something powerful could happen.
You've also made the world's largest painting.
I was painting 22 hours a day for 11 months. My pelvis went out of line on two axes, that way and that way. Weirdly, I don't know how, it told this incredible story of the journey of humanity. Rolls-Royce came to me, we actually created together from start to finish six cars. Artists get it wrong a lot. They focus on the finished product. You focus on purifying your intentions. We're looking for, like, how do we find happiness? How do we equate happiness? How do we equate success? All this nonsense. All we're here for is love.
What's one art trend you can't understand?
Technology-driven art or generative art.
Hi, Sasha. Welcome to Gulf Buzz. How are you today?
Good, man. Good to see you.
Same here. It's a pleasure to have you on. First of all, a lovely studio. Would you like to tell our audience a little bit about your studio before we get in?
Yeah, sure. Good to see you, man. You're welcome. My studio, it's quite a special place. It's a rare thing. It's not like most artists don't create this type of studio, so it's a little different. I have a studio in London, New York, Dubai, mainly. They're the main three. And each one does something different. So the London studio is where I create the latest collection. So that's, a collection is 12 paintings. It takes about 2 years to create. I create very few works. Like, most artists are doing 50, 60 paintings a year. Because of the way I paint, it takes 2 years to create a collection. I'm quite fixed on numbers, so it's always 12 pieces, and I work on them together. That studio in London is where I create the latest collection.
Okay.
New York is sort of much more rustic, where big pieces get created and one-off installations and things like that. Dubai, I've used more as, I guess, an HQ at the moment. So it's got the office, the boardroom, the think tank room, the NFT room, the digital room. It's got my studio where I create, but it's also got, as you can see, private gallery spaces. So you got like the white gallery, the black gallery, the gray gallery. But I wanted to create a journey through my work. So what I house here is, I've been painting 26 years now as a professional artist. I've actually got my 25-year retrospective, started last year, and it's a world tour going to all the top museums and institutions of the world, which is cool. But the way I've done it, luckily, when I was a lot younger, my dad said, hey, look, with every collection you create, keep the best two pieces. Keep them for you. He'd known a lot of artists, you know, who had, in their later stage in life, who regretted not keeping their works. So I did that. And I guess in 26 years, I've done 14 collections. I've kept the best two pieces from each collection. So what will happen is the collection will be finished and it'll tour around the world. It's not quick, it takes like 6 to 9 months and then it's sold out. But I will keep, the best two will go with the tour, but I'll keep them. That's what you see here. So you see the best two works from 1998 to 2023 and a few other extra works, you know, between that era. And that's how I'm able to do a retrospective collection. So it's really nice.
No, I can definitely see the collection. Like, when I was going through the whole art gallery before I met you, all of the paintings have some meaning. It was so mesmerizing. It put me into the Zen mode when I walked in.
That's good. That's a good sign.
So one of your paintings, it's the first painting to go to the moon. And that's happening on 24th of December, just before Christmas Eve. So how does that feel and how did all that happen?
That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. So basically, NASA haven't been on the moon for 50 years. It's their 50th anniversary. So they've been working on it for 20 years to make sure they land on the moon this year. There's a company called Spacebit who have been working with NASA on this mission. They then partnered with Jeff Bezos with his Blue Origin to create the rocket. And then a company called Astrobotic who do all the scientific payloads, the engineering, the build work for NASA. They build the moon lander, for example. And they got together. They said, this is a very important mission. Technology has developed so much in the last 5 years, so much in the last 2 years, and in the last 6 months, the movement in technology is insane. So what we can learn now from the moon that we couldn't learn 6 months ago, there's a huge development. They came to me with a company called Selenium, and they said, we're doing this mission. We'd like to put your art on the moon. And at first I said, no way. Absolutely not. Hate it. Horrible idea. I have a bit of a problem, I think as many people probably do, with why are we spending so much money on space exploration when we can't look after our own planet? That's a big problem for me. There is starvation, conflict, water shortage, issues throughout the continents of Southeast Asia, Africa, where people are dying every day due to lack of clean water. Why are we spending billions, actually trillions now, on space exploration? It seems about vanity, ego, muscle flexing, not the right things. So I said no. Then I thought about it for a bit, and they came back to me and they said, look, we'd really like you to do this. Can you rethink? What do you think? And then I thought about it. I thought, okay, wait a sec. They're going to do this anyway. People are going to spend money going to space anyway. So I might as well do something on this mission that can actually benefit humanity. They're going to do it. Let's turn it into a benefit. So then I started developing a few ideas, and then I thought, okay, there's an opportunity here. So I realized that if I could create a work of art that meant something, that symbolized something, that created a shift in consciousness in our world, then something powerful could happen and we could be benefited in intrinsically and tangibly on Earth. So that's when I developed the idea of creating a heart piece. And in the heart piece would be two figures entwined, symbolizing the reconnection of humanity. And as humanity reconnected with these two figures, there was this world around them within a heart of a flourishing world, flourishing flora, fauna, wildlife, ocean life, humanity itself, trees, forests, deserts. The world that we could have if we reconnected as a humanity. And I thought, okay, that becomes quite powerful. And then speaking with NASA, who are the partners of the mission, it was a case of, okay, a few people have gone to space, they've dropped a few artworks here and there. How do we confirm that this is the first official artwork on the moon? And NASA said, the only way, Neil Armstrong at the time in 62, he wanted to put the first official artwork on the moon. And NASA said, absolutely not, because you can't prove that it's going to be sustainable on the moon. It won't last. It'll disintegrate. That can't be called an official artwork on the moon. So he said, okay, fair enough. But he took little tiles, thumbnail tiles of work from Rosenberg, Warhol, the artists at the time, and just dropped them on the moon. NASA said, if we're going to make a statement that this is the first official artwork to land on the surface, the lunar surface of our moon, we have to prove that this plate that you create this artwork on can last eternally on the moon's surface. Not a year, not 10 years, eternally. Eternally in the human standards is 1,000 years. So we undergo, I guess it's about 3 years of testing this plate, putting it through various tests to create an alloy that would be sustainable and resilient to the moon, lunar conditions.
Wow.
The lunar conditions are extreme. You're looking at plus 200 degrees in the day, minus 203 degrees at night. Anything you land on the moon, including the moon lander, including everything, any apparatus that you put on the moon has a 2-week cycle of a day on Earth. And basically it will, for 2 weeks, it is daytime and it's plus 200 degrees. When you go into night and it goes minus 200 degrees, everything there that man has created disintegrates. It can't exist. Any engineering, any ergonomics, any robotics will just seize up. Everything will just disintegrate. So we had to be able to prove that this plate could last those conditions, deal with radiation, gravity, meteorites, all these issues of the lunar surface. So that was a big deal. So I created the artwork, and then I laser etched it into a plate that was this lunar resilient plate, and it became something really powerful, because then I realized that, okay, the only light we have when we go into darkness, the only natural light is our moon. So then, if when the Earth goes into darkness, a light is shone from the moon, but it's shining through my painting, which symbolizes a reconnection of humanity, that becomes a really powerful statement. The symbolism behind it becomes something so beautiful. So that's when I got really excited, and I thought, actually, this is incredibly beautiful. It's very powerful. And the messaging behind it of this reconnection of humanity, it might shift a consciousness through the light of the moon. So that was really exciting. And then I said, okay, this is all good. I like this, but we need a charitable element. So when the piece lands on the moon, for the first time ever, due to the technology that we've now developed, there'll be a beep, beep, beep in NASA's control room. You'll see it land on the moon, and you'll see the moon dust go up. And then there'll be a beep, 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 and 8 heart NFTs will be released from that piece back to Earth. And those heart NFTs will raise money for 8 charitable concerns in our world. So it will actually raise tangible funds for humanity on Earth in the areas that is most needed right now. So that suddenly became something really beautiful.
That solved your purpose and motto that you wanted first, that you were not agreeing to it because you thought, why are we spending so much money?
Yeah.
But then there's a way out of it by donating everything that, like, from the NFT. I saw some of the original ones that are kept in the gallery.
Yeah, they're cool, man. It's the 8 elements of our world.
Yes. Could you explain those 8 elements to our people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone looks at different elements of our world. Some say there are 4, some say there are 6, some say et cetera, right? But I just identified the 8 elements that meant something to me right now. The obvious ones are earth, wind, water, fire. But then you've got air, obviously. You've got humanity, which is the forgotten element, sadly. You've got time, which is an element. You've got light. When you put those together, I think you start understanding the makeup of our world. When you really understand the meaning of each of those elements, it becomes something really poignant. So, I mean, it's an incredible thing when you think about it. Like my daughter, who's only 7, well, she's 8 actually just, she said, "Daddy, are you really putting a painting on the moon?" And I'm like, "God, I am, yeah." And you don't realize what a big deal it is until others sort of point it out. But just to think that that is on the moon, that that symbolizes the reconnection of humanity, that that symbolizes a new consciousness, an understanding of vibrations, the importance of them, energy that we emit, and most importantly, intention. I think that's the key to everything in life is intention. So I hope with that, something beautiful will happen. We take off on the 24th of December. They've chosen that date purposely because that's the date where most people around the world are watching their TVs. It's Christmas Eve, families are at home, families are together, and they'll all be watching this moon take off. Which is really exciting.
I'm totally excited. You know, when I got to know the date today, I was very excited as well. So I'm also looking forward to see it going up. You've also made the world's largest painting at the Grand Ballroom in Atlantis, which was sold for $62 million. And you decided not to keep the money with you. That's very hard in today's world and age. Like, people do not do that. What motivated you to do that? And what came within you?
The shorter version of the long story is we'd hit COVID. Leading up to COVID, our world was full of static. I felt it everywhere. The issues are, which took me a while as an artist to understand, but it's actually quite simple. Humanity is very overcomplicated. It's made of love and empathy. That's it. 2 words, love and empathy. Art is very overcomplicated. It's made up of 2 words, love and empathy. All the rest is nonsense. Distraction, smoke and mirrors. When you combine art and humanity with love and empathy, something really powerful happens. But through that process, I sort of understood that we are made of energy.
Yeah.
We communicate at our most poignant and our most powerful through energy. But the issue is the energy we emit is made of our intentions. When our intentions become questionable, we emit static. Intentions become agenda-filled, financially driven, ego-driven, etc. We emit static. Unfortunately, there is so much static emitted into our world. I could feel it everywhere. And it was everywhere. And it was getting worse and worse. Energy can't transmit through static, hence the breakdown of humanity. Simple as that. That's the state we're in. We overcomplicate it, but it's as simple as that. If we focus on purifying our intentions, if we focus on emitting an energy of love and empathy and compassion, that vibrates at a higher frequency and that changes the consciousness of humanity. The issue is when you emit static, you're actually doing a lot of damage to all humans that live on this planet. And then you realize that the only legacy we really give to this world is the energy we emit and the vibrations we leave behind. That's it. So leading up to COVID, I felt static everywhere. Every country, everywhere you went, every room you were in, it was just heavy. So I thought, okay, there's a moment here. There's an opportunity to create something, to tap into this. The issue with me is I don't paint through wanting to do it or, you know, having a commission or, oh, I better paint a bit now. I paint because I have to. Because if I don't, I go a bit mad. The world doesn't really make sense to me. Nothing in the world makes sense to me. No, nothing around me makes any sense, except when I'm painting. So I paint to reconnect to our world. So I knew I had to paint, and it was tricky, and I just thought, okay, and I spoke to Atlantis, and I said, hey, I'd love to create something. I think I can create something beautiful. And the guy there, amazing guy called Tim Kelly, who's now the president of the Atlantis Group. At the time, he was the VP. He said, yeah, go for it. Let's see what happens. So I just rolled out a big canvas and I started painting. And I paint from a meditative state. My brain waves are in theta, which is a state of surrender. They put pads on my brain and sort of found that when I paint, my brain waves are in theta. The issue is you can't create from theta. It's a contradiction. Theta is a state of surrender. Mozart did it. Beethoven did it. But no artists have done it. So I, through sort of painting in that way, I realized that I'm in an incredibly deep meditative state, like a trance, and I surrender to something up there. And I borrow a moment and something happens. And I focus on purifying my intentions. Because then when you lay the paint with pure intention, that's where the power lies. That's when the paint vibrates at a higher frequency. And that's when it enters the soul of each and every human being that interacts with it. So I focused on that and the painting got bigger and bigger. And then the painting became, Guinness called us up and said, hey, this is big. This could be a Guinness World Record. And then we found that if I made it a bit bigger, it would be. So I did, because I thought that'd be cool. And, you know, it was cool. It was another world record for the largest social philanthropic artistic project in history. It connected with 3.6 billion people around the world, which beat Facebook's record, 3.2 billion. So that was extraordinary, just to think that you can do that with art and intention, love and empathy. That's it. No algorithms, no technology, no sort of brainwashing people, none of that, just pure intention. So that was beautiful. And, you know, the intention was always that I would, from this huge thing on the floor, I would find something, because obviously it was a bit of a mess. It was very thick paint. A lot of it got just sort of semi-destroyed. A lot of it didn't really last the journey, because I was painting 22 hours a day for 11 months.
What?
Yeah. So I destroyed my spine, two discs came out, my heels dislocated from my ankles, they separated actually. My pelvis went out of line on two axes, that way and that way. I was having pain injections twice a day, every day. I had two operations. So, you know, it's full on. I completely destroyed my body. But because I was in a trance state, I didn't really realize the damage I was doing. I was on 2 hours sleep a night, painting 22 hours a day, surrendering to something. And I just kept laying paint and paint and paint and paint. And obviously a lot of it didn't really last and it was just paint on canvas on the floor at that time. It wasn't really a painting. And then I saw that there's an opportunity to take from that the pieces that could then make what became famously The Journey of Humanity. So that was the fun bit. I then sort of cut, you know, pieces from this and reconfigured the painting with the best parts, the parts that had survived that 11-month journey and the parts that sort of made sense to me energy-wise, vibration-wise. And I rehung it on the wall at Atlantis because obviously you needed to be able to view it, right? So we had to hang it on this big L-shaped wall so people could view it. And beautifully and weirdly, I don't know how, it told this incredible story of the journey of humanity from start to finish, from childhood to death to the afterlife and then the cycle of life. And it was just beautiful. I didn't feel I created it. So I found it so beautiful and how that came out of this mess on the floor, this beautiful painting with this story, that was just so, so beautiful. And that obviously, you know, became the journey of humanity. The intention was always that piece would be auctioned and what was raised would go to charities. So, you know, but that's how I've worked for 20 years. That's not a new thing. I changed the model of art like 20 years ago when artists for the last few hundred years have worked with a gallery. They give 50% to the gallery, 50% to the artist. The gallery market the artist, do books for the artist, ship the paintings from A to B, put on the big exhibition, invite the clients, make the sales. They take 50% of the sales, the artist gets 50%. Sometimes you negotiate, but it's pretty standard 50-50. And I sort of looked at this model and thought, it doesn't really work for me. You don't really have control over what you create, what you do. You only have a show when they say you have a show. But what if you suddenly have this moment of inspiration and creation and you've got something to share with the world? And the gallery like, well, we're not showing you for another 18 months. And it's very manipulated and controlled. So I looked at it and I said, okay, there's a different model here. So that's when I changed the model where I basically worked, instead of with galleries, with charities. Charities all around the world have done it for 20 years. And I decided to give 80% of all the sales to the charity and 20% stays with me to enable me to keep painting, to run the studio, etc. And that just made sense. And it was like, why on earth aren't people doing that? Because then you do something good for the world. You don't need more than 20% as an artist. Money just buys you time to create. What else is it for? So that's what it was. That's what I created. And now what's beautiful, since that, since the journey of humanity, since what, you know, was achieved, before then, artists were not doing anything for charity. Galleries weren't doing anything for charity. Now you'll find it very hard to find an artist that isn't giving to a charity or linked to a charity or a gallery that isn't doing charitable things. That was unheard of before. So it's a beautiful thing. And for me, that's the most powerful part of that journey, is how it inspired others to do the same.
That's definitely a very motivating story, like to know that you were one of the first. It's always said that it's that one person that takes to change the world. And I think you are one of them, truly, like after listening to your story so far, it is very motivating. Moving on to, you've also done a few paintings for, not a few, I think a lot for the celebrities. And you've done one for the FIFA World Cup, which just recently, which I just saw upstairs.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
It has Messi's original jersey that he wore on the finals. What would you like to say on that?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I do like one commission a year, no more. And it is normally, well, pretty much always, either a top celebrity or a major sporting event, you know. So I've done the painting to celebrate the life of Nelson Mandela when he sadly passed, the life of Muhammad Ali, the career of Roger Federer, the career of Rafa Nadal, Michael Schumacher, Lewis Hamilton, David Beckham, Sir Alex Ferguson, Virat Kohli, Sachin Tendulkar, you know, all the sort of legends of the different sports around the world. And that's been an amazing journey to be able to do. I actually created the painting to celebrate 140 years of Ashes cricket history, which was amazing. It's the only modern painting hanging at Lord's in England. So all the other paintings are from the 19th century, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s. And it's the only huge scale modern artwork hanging at Lord's, which is really cool. And it's got the handprints and signatures of all the guys from the Ashes series, England, Australia, from the last 140 years that are still alive, that are still with us. They handprinted and signed the painting. So unbelievable. I did the London Olympics 2012 painting. A lot of paintings like that, the Rugby World Cup painting, painting for Prince Albert, celebrate various charitable endeavors he's been doing. But the football one was really cool. It was really, really cool because, you know, it's a little different to have the World Cup in Doha, in Qatar. There's something special about the Arab world. And I felt that I knew what I wanted to achieve, and I didn't know it would happen, but it really worked. It's got that Arab sensibility in it. You can feel there are these five Arabs sat watching the match, and they're so beautiful and poetic and fluid in their movement and their stature and the way they're connecting with each other. It's something very special. Then you've got the dhows, you've got the water, the boats bobbing on the water, you've got the skyline, you know, the amazing skyline of Qatar, those sort of skyscrapers that reach into the sky with glass and shape and form. That's stunning. Then you've got, which is really cool, obviously you've got the pitch itself, you've got the fact that it's celebrated the final between France and Argentina. It is, in my mind, probably the greatest World Cup final of all time. I mean, I think it really might be. So we then got Kylian Mbappe's handprint and signature, being the main man from France. Messi's shirt signed that he wore. I mean, he wore a lot of shirts, but one of them. And that's embedded in the painting. And then you've actually got David Beckham's footprint and signature, which is really cool because I think it's because I'm a British artist, you know, to link with David on that and do his footprint. He was a big part of, you know, the bid with Qatar. And he's a big ambassador for the game of football. What he's done in Miami and, you know, He's a great ambassador. So that that made it very special, you know. The thing I love, though, it's got all the legends of the game in within the Crescent building set just beneath this mosque. And it's really, really beautiful because you've got guys like Zinedine Zidane, Pelé, George Best, Maradona, Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Neymar. You've got the legends and just the great names of the game. And that's really cool. So the piece itself, I was really happy with.
No, I saw it. It looked stunning. Like, people really need to come down and see that piece. It's worth to have a look at it. Moving on, you're doing something for COP28 that is happening in the month
very
in
soon,
Dubai.
Man, very
yeah,
soon.
Very soon. And I heard you're doing something exclusive with them. Could you give us a little sneak peek about it?
Yeah, I can't say too much, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's a couple of links with that. I think it's... All right, well, I'll tell you what I'm creating. So it's a live creation in the Al Wasl Dome, which is very cool. And the idea of it is that it's a huge circular canvas that will show the disconnection of humanity at the beginning. And there'll be a performance, I'm not going to say who with, but a very, very special musical artist who will create a beautiful piece of music. And during that creation, about a two-hour creation of this disconnected, disparate humanity that we have become, which is very sad and very stupid, it'll show the reconnection of humanity by all these disparate islands reconnecting. There'll be a black heart in the middle, and as the islands connect, the heart will lighten. And it'll just show how we are one. Our brothers and sisters are not our brothers and sisters. They're another part of us. The stranger in the street is not the stranger. He's our brother, and our brother is another part of us. So we are one. You have to understand that. You have to understand universal consciousness. You have to understand what we are all one really means, instead of just chucking it out there. You have to understand what the word love means. Love is the most overused an underused word in the English language. It is chucked around as if it means nothing, and it is not used enough in the right way. We've forgotten what it means, actually. We have actually forgotten what the word love means, which is really sad. And it's a lot of why we have so many problems we have in the world. Not understanding that if you emit an energy of love and empathy into our world, it's the most powerful thing you possess. We are incredibly powerful beings.
Yeah.
In an incredibly powerful world, but only when we connect with what is good and right, only when we omit this energy of love. People underestimate what that can do, which is really sad, but I think it's the only way forward. So the painting is going to really shine a light on that, the understanding of love, what it means, and how we can carve a better future for ourselves by projecting outwardly and inwardly the true sense of that word. Love. That's our humanity. That's our humility. And that is our future. So I hope the painting can really show that and create a shift in consciousness. So it'll be with all the world leaders there. And, you know, it's an opportunity to create a vibration that can enter their consciousness.
It's going to happen live. So do we have a date for that?
I can't tell you the date. No.
That's okay. You've also worked with Rolls-Royce, where you've painted six cars, and it's one of one. So how did that happen?
Yeah, Rolls-Royce came to me. People don't really understand that. They're a 148-year-old company. People don't realize that. One of the first ever creators of the automobile. And they've never done a series collaboration with an artist. So when they came to me, that was a big deal. And they said, you know, we want to create something special. What do you think? And I said, yeah, what have you got in mind? And the idea is we actually created together from start to finish, six cars. I didn't just paint them. So the idea is, if you've got the money, you can buy a Rolls-Royce and you can do whatever you want to it. You can paint it pink, you can put hearts on it, you can take the roof off, you can cut a hole in it, you can do whatever you like, and you drive it around and it's your bespoke Rolls-Royce. But Rolls-Royce will never ever, and in their 148-year history, they have never ever put out a car from their factory that isn't Rolls-Royce. They are the most protected brand in the world. They're one of the most powerful brands in the world, to the point where the word Rolls-Royce is now an adjective in the English language. You say the Rolls-Royce of fridges, the Rolls-Royce of ovens, the Rolls-Royce of cameras. It's become an adjective. That's how strong that brand is. People forget that it's actually just a car and it's a brand. So it was, you know, a big project to embark on, a lot of pressure. But I worked with the chief designers in Goodwood, and we created six cars around the five elements: earth, wind, water, fire, and air. And then the sixth car, humanity, the sixth element. And I painted the entire like gallery section inside the car, because it's a Phantom 2 series, but it's the top spec Phantom 2, where the seats go down flat, where it's 1.5 times the length, the width, it's huge. And there's this huge gallery section at the front, which I painted representing each of those elements. And then the car was designed around that. So each color, each thread, each ribbon, wrap of leather, every single moment and texture within the car was hand-picked, hand-woven, and taken from a color in the painting. So they actually matched the color to create the hand-stitching and everything. It was unbelievable. And then on the outside, it's the first time in their history they had someone else's logo on the car, which is, that's insane. That was the biggest moment. So it's my heart logo. And then each one has the name of the element. So each one is a one of one, one off. And that shows these two figures entwined, you know, to show that reconnection of humanity, linking to our six elements. And then it's the first ever artist designed Spirit of Ecstasy, which is the lady at the front, which rotates and has the base, which says the six elements around the base, and each car rotates to match the element that it is. And then you've got the first ever NFT embedded within any car, but within a Rolls-Royce, where you click the glove box and the NFT arises. So that was pretty beautiful. And that was a charitable project where we raised a huge amount of money. The six cars sold like that to six owners that we sort of handpicked, which was amazing. And yeah, we raised a lot of money for four different charities, but the six cars spread over the four charities in the areas of sustainability, equality, health, and education, the four main concerns of our world. So it was a great project.
You had a lot of big, like the first, you've done a lot of these achievements. And how are you still so humble? Like what keeps you so grounded? It's very, very rare to find that in today's world.
I think that's quite easy for me, that part, because I don't believe that I create anything. I believe that artists get it wrong a lot. The artists that you don't know, the up-and-coming artists, the students, but also the top artists and the top names that you know get it wrong. They either focus on the finished product, what they're creating. That's not great. Or they go one step better and they focus on the process of creation. Often, they'll focus on that end product, who they're going to sell it to, how much for, who's going to market it, how they're going to market it, before they've even made it. Either way, whether you focus on the finished product or you focus on the journey of creation, it's completely wrong. If you focus on how you live your life as an artist, that's what matters. You focus on living a life of grace. You focus on purifying your intentions. Then what happens is, every now and then, you borrow a moment. Every now and then. But it's just a moment. It's not yours. You're borrowing it. And it's not a huge thing in the test of time. It's a moment. No more. With that moment, something magical happens. And then you give it back and you say thank you with grace and gratitude. You say thank you. If you do that, those moments keep coming. As soon as you engage the ego and you think, oh, look at me, look what I've done, I'm amazing. Those moments don't come anymore. People call it writer's block or creator's block. There's no such thing. It's when you don't live a life of grace. It's when you don't surrender. It's when you don't accept humility. It's when you engage the ego. They don't come. So that's really how it's quite, you know, that's how I am. So I do it for selfish reasons. I do it because I have to paint. If I'm going to paint and spend my life painting, it better have purpose in the world, because otherwise I'm going to feel so empty by the time I die. I'm going to feel like, what a waste, because I sacrificed so much for creation. It needs to be worthwhile, and it needs to be a legacy worth giving your life to. And the only way to do that is to create with intention. The only way to do that is to concentrate on your intentions and on how you live your life. And then you can emit that energy that creates vibrations that last forever. Because once energy is emitted, it's got nowhere to go. It can't disappear. It's there forever. That's the only legacy. It's that thing of if the world was deaf and blind and we were judged by our vibrations, how would we do? If we focus on that, that changes our world. It changes our life. It changes our consciousness. And it changes our sense of humility. Because the sound of our voice, our projection, doesn't mean anything. It's our vibrations that mean something. That's what changes everything. So for me, that bit's easy. The nice thing I learned on that journey is it doesn't really matter what you create. It doesn't matter what you build. It doesn't matter what you make. It matters the intentions with which you do it. So as an artist, if you make the most beautiful thing, but you're not living a life of grace, you're not a soul of love and empathy, then what you create has no meaning. It has no relevancy in this world.
So since we are speaking of legacy, Virat Kohli also recently came at par with Sachin Tendulkar's record. And you made something for Virat Kohli in the past.
One of Sachin's records. Yeah. So I've known Virat a long time. Yeah. I played cricket for England, young England. So
really?
Andy Strauss was my captain. Cricket's been my thing for a long time. Lucky enough to play against Wazim, Waqar, Mushi Mushi in Pakistan, and then against Rahul Dravid, Sachin, all those boys. Played with Fred Flintoff, you know, so I've played with some real characters. Cricket's my favorite game in the world. It's an incredible game. It's a game of the mind. It's just the most beautiful game. I think Virat's done a huge amount for Indian cricket, more than people realize now. You know, he's such a character. When he first came on the scene, it was love him or hate him. It was, whoa, this guy's a lot to deal with. He was in your face. But Indian cricket needed that at that time. It needed someone who was going to stand up and fight with passion, with belief, would lay down his arms for his team, would give his heart, would give his soul, would give everything he had to win a match. India needed that at the time as a nation and a cricketing nation. What he did for the Indian team is incredible. So he's a great friend. He's been on a journey, like a lot of us have. A lot of this has happened within his career and his personal life, and I think that happens to the best of us. Anyone who says it hasn't happened, I don't think is being honest. And I think that's what's made him who he is. You know, he's now a little softer. There's a little more humility. There's a little more focus. There's a little quieter drive. And that's the evolution of a man or a woman. You know, that's how we evolve. He's evolved beautifully. And it doesn't surprise me that he has equaled Sachin's record. He's going to find it hard to beat the Test record. That's a phenomenal amount of runs. I mean, there are many records out there, but Sachin's runs record is phenomenal. But yeah, you know, hats off to Virat. I did his painting for him a few years ago when he first beat one of the big records to celebrate his career and everything he had achieved. And it was actually in celebration of 10 years of the IPL. Really cool painting. It was really fun. With all the great, it had like 50 handprints and signatures of all the greatest cricketers that have ever played the game, from the West Indies, South Africa, Australia, England, Sri Lanka, India, Pakistan. It was amazing. And they were all there present. And, you know, you had Clive Lloyd, Viv Richards, you had Brian Lara, Sachin Tendulkar, Ian Botham, you know, all the great names of cricket, the great characters. And we unveiled it on the stage. And then I bowled a Dusra Virat and he tried to hit it into the crowd and he actually missed it and it went over the top of the bat. And then we did another one and he smashed it into the crowd. So it was really fun. We unveiled it and it raised a lot of money. It actually ended up going for $4.5 million for Virat's Foundation for the Children of India. So I've done a lot. My main focus in charity is for children.
Yeah.
A lot in India, for the slums of India and the street kids in India who just really need some help and some support and a bit of a chance. Such beautiful kids. So a lot with MS Dhoni's Foundation, Virat's, things like Kushi, Habitat, you know, a lot of those great charities in India. So it's a great privilege.
That's very motivating. To the person who you are today, how did all that come together for you? Like your childhood, how was your childhood like?
I have no idea. The problem is, if I was to answer that, I could talk for an hour. But all I can tell you is, we owe a lot to our parents, more than we know, more than we realize, more than we give them credit for. But we owe a lot to ourselves. There's a few things I've learned on the way. Every single human being on this earth, all we're here for, we're looking for, like, how do we find happiness? How do we equate happiness? How do we equate success? All this nonsense. All we're here for is love. That's it. Everything else is a distraction. It enables money to be made. It enables things to be created that we're told we need, that we don't need. Nobody needs AI. Nobody. Nobody needs the metaverse. Nobody needs any of this nonsense. What we need is our humanity. AI is the biggest distraction we have in our world right now. And it's made up of the history of our world and what we can feed into it with regards to data. Well, the fact that we as human beings don't understand consciousness, energy, love, humanity, what type of AI do you think we're going to create? And what's that going to take over from our development as human beings? Unbelievable. So what we'll end up doing is going backwards, using technology to go backwards, further away from our humanity, towards a world that doesn't even understand love and empathy. Because the big difference between, I can give the best example is in art. The power of art is in its intention, right? Paint vibrates. It vibrates at a different frequency. You put a red next to a blue, it'll vibrate differently next to a red next to a green or a red next to a black. It'll vibrate. That's how you're seeing it. It's the vibration. All right. The difference is you get five guys to put a brush in the same paint, same brush, and lay a stroke on a canvas. Those five strokes will look different to do with the intention with which that is laid. That creates the vibration. AI can never, ever create with intention. That's your biggest problem. So we're saying, yeah, but you know, it can speed things up and it can create amazing images and it can create, yeah, sure. It can speed things up. It can create quick images that can connect with us and give us an understanding of something very quickly. Okay, fine. But it needs to stay well away from art because it doesn't understand and it can never create with intention, with compassion, with love. That's a big problem. So that's a big problem in our world. So I think when I saw how I developed as a human being, it's that same thing, I think, of a lot of things get thrown in our way to distract us and we go with them and we go off path. But I think if you can just understand a simple thing, if you can understand that humanity is overcomplicated and it's made of love and empathy, that will bring you back to that path. If you can understand that there are many things in the world that we're told we need that we don't, that will bring us back to the path. If we understand that the only thing we're here for is love, that will bring you back to the path because that is all we're here for. And as long as we understand our legacy about the energy we emit and the vibrations we leave behind, that will bring you back to the path.
That's really interesting. Trust me. Before we end the segment for today, there's a small game that's called Brew and Buzz with Golf Buzz. I'm going to ask you a certain question and you can just answer them in one word.
All right, man.
If you could only use one color in your painting for the rest of your life, which would it be?
I'm not even answering that.
What's the first thing you do when you approach a blank canvas?
I close my eyes.
Which person, living or dead, is your biggest art inspiration?
Nelson Mandela.
What's the strangest object you've ever painted on?
Oh, wow. An aeroplane, an A37.
Oh, really? If not an artist, what would you be? I think I know this.
Cricketer.
What's one art trend you can't understand?
Technology-driven art or AI-created art. Or generative art?
One word to describe the feeling when you are in the zone creating.
I have no idea because I'm in a very deep meditative state. So I'm in a trance. Love.
Love. What's your go-to music playlist while working?
I only play one song. I've played it on a loop for the last 15 years. It's 2 minutes, 48 seconds. Sometimes I paint for 72 hours nonstop. No sleep, no break, nothing. I play one song on a loop, and I have done for 15 years.
Which song is that?
It's from a movie called The Good Lie, and it's called Growing Up. And it's about, it's a true story with Reese Witherspoon playing the main lady, and it's to do with this American lady who rescued some refugees and brought them back to their homeland. Very beautiful, beautiful film.
The final one. What's the most challenging piece you've ever created?
The Journey of Humanity.
So you were saying you wanted to paint an aeroplane, like a flight.
No, I have done. I painted a plane. So basically, UNESCO asked me to create 50 paintings to celebrate the 50 most beloved UNESCO World Heritage Sites around our world in 50 different countries from all 7 continents in celebration of their 50th anniversary. We opened the exhibition with UNESCO on the Burj Al Arab helipad, became the first exhibition on the helipad of all 50 paintings, where you go around this through this maze, and it's like a journey around our world. And the idea of that is to reconnect to our ancestral past, our cultural history. I think that's a really important thing, really, because the main issue at the moment is education, obviously, and these guys who think they're rewiring education, they don't understand that as they're rewiring education, history is becoming less and less prominent in schools, to the point where 6, 7, and 8-year-olds have no clue. They don't even know, is there a subject called history? It's so scary how history is being dissolved. History is the single most important subject any child can learn anywhere in the world. Because unless you learn your history, unless you learn the monstrosities that your country or your ancestral past have done to other humans, unless you understand colonialism, unless you understand slavery, unless you understand empire, unless you understand the dirty and the dark history of tyranny, of genocide, unless you understand the truth of that history, you have no chance of creating a better future for our world. And all we'll do is repeat the same nonsense. And the biggest problem is that the history that's taught in schools is the history of that country that they want you to know. It's not the true history. This is a big problem. This is probably the biggest problem in the world right now. So I would really want to focus on that big time. But anyway, that was the idea of this project with UNESCO. And then it went to Everest, became the first ever collection unveiled on Mount Everest. And then it went to Paris with the Louvre at the UNESCO headquarters in Paris, the UN headquarters, beautiful. And that's where I painted the, actually it was an A380 aeroplane in the fuselage. And then we cut the fuselage out. And then we hung the pieces of the fuselage from the UN's headquarters in Paris, symbolizing that reconnection to our past. And it was in honor of UNESCO's 50th anniversary. So it was a beautiful thing.
One last thing. What would you say to the budding artists, the young ones?
I would say, don't listen to anyone. Find your silence. Meditate. Learn to surrender. Then you'll find magic. Never lose your inner child. Focus all the power you have on keeping the child alive inside you forever. And finally, I would say, don't focus on what you make. Focus on the intentions with which you make it. Focus on how you live your life. And then magic will come to you.
Thank you so much for today, Sasha. It was a pleasure meeting you.
And you, man. Thank you. And you. Good to see you.
Same here.
You're watching me on Gulf Buzz Podcast.